Do you invest in ETFs? Whether you're thinking, what in the world is an ETF? Or you're looking for the next opportunity to add to your portfolio. GlobalX has you covered. From big tech to bonds and bars of gold, GlobalX offers a wide range of exchange-traded funds. Go beyond ordinary with GlobalX ETFs. Visit globalxetfs.com.au. That's globalxetfs.com.au.
InvestSmart's portfolios are turning 10. And to celebrate, 10 InvestSmart boot camps are up for grabs. This self-paced online course is ideal for both seasoned investors and those who are just starting out. Valued at $99, you could win a spot on this highly rated course. To enter the competition and for terms and conditions, simply visit investsmart.com.au/win. Don't miss out on this chance to learn from experts and take your investing to the next level. Simply visit investsmart.com.au/win. Good luck.
Hey there, here's a quick note. This podcast contains general financial advice only. That means it's not specific to you, your needs, goals, or objectives, so don't act on the information until you've spoken with your financial advisor. You'll find our full disclosure, disclaimer, and link to our financial services guide in the show notes.
James, welcome to this episode of the show, mate.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
Yeah, it's always good to chat when it comes to things like pre-retirement, post-retirement, property is what we're going to focus on a little bit today, as well as things like super and a few other things in the mix, because many people will know that you've appeared across RAS many times before, and we work with you on the financial planning side. You help a lot of our community that are in their 40s and 50s and 60s just strategize for retirement or whatever they've got going on in their life. But for today's episode, this kind of came about as a result of a lot of requests through the podcast, a lot of requests through our websites, and people just reaching out generally speaking, because for everyone that doesn't know, maybe if you're overseas, you might not know, but there's like a housing situation, we could say, in Australia. A lot of people feeling angst and pretty uncertain about either renting a property, starting a family and getting themselves into a property that they own, just really anything. So this is a major issue for a lot of people. And naturally, as a result of that, families, friends, loved ones who care for those people want to support them. And I know we've had a lot of people come through RASC and speak with you and your team at Northeast Wealth about this and how to, you know, manage that goal. So how do you help a family member get into property and so on and so forth? Before we get into your solutions or strategies and kind of like thought-provoking, I guess, questions and reflective questions, what I would like you to do is just explain a little bit about your business, Northeast Wealth, and how you might be kind of different to other financial planning businesses across the country.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Really looking forward to this conversation, by the way, because it's one of the more frequent conversations we have with our members. In line with your question, we're a financial advisory practice. We're located in Melbourne, although we serve people all around the country. Our number one focus is to ensure that people make more progress. And that's something that I think might seem quite straightforward, but it's actually a really significant point of differentiation when we lean right into that, because progress comes in a lot of forms. Obviously, we can make more progress by way of reducing your tax or by moving you to an investment allocation that's going to give you a better financial outcome. But progress also comes in the form of being a lot clearer around what you want to do, having a clear and actionable roadmap as to what am I doing this financial year, what am I doing next financial year, if I'm selling assets, if I'm downsizing, when is that happening? And then once I do that, where realistically am I going and what am I going to be doing? And our experience is that the more that we lean into that process, the better equipped we are to help people with their plans. Life's always changing for a whole heap of reasons, and that's one of the wonderful things about life. But the flow on of that is that my own experience is when you build financial plans for people, those plans tend to become obsolete without any intervention or iteration and amendment, because people's lives are just changing all the time. And an example of that might be here where we have some retirees or pre-retirees that say, hey, here's our plan. And then as part of that, not initially mentioned, but a year or two later, they come to us and as part of our reviews, they say, hey, by the way, we're feeling a little bit concerned about our son or our daughter or both because of how hard it is for them to get into the property market. What can we do? That changes the plan entirely depending on the right strategy. So our focus really is around having a good cadence, knowing exactly what we're doing, and then let's build a roadmap and let's stick to it.
Real quickly then, so people obviously can book a free call with your team and learn more about Northeast, and they, like your team, can learn more about them. But once someone becomes a client of Northeast, do you provide like quarterly updates? How often do you speak to your clients? Or you call them members, which is quite unique. Can you just give us a sense of that?
Quarterly. Yeah, we call them members. There's times when we sit down with individuals or couples and we identify that you probably don't need any ongoing service here. You know, your situation is such that we're pretty confident we're not likely to see a lot of change in the short to medium term. Also, the plan's pretty straightforward and pretty actionable. And then there are other times where we say, hey, based on your circumstances and a whole host of things, we think it's going to be better that we work together, and then we'd be proposing let's work ongoing.
Yeah.
I've been self-employed advisor for a decade, coming up 10 years, and we've tried a lot of different review frequencies. You know, in the really early days, we had different structures where some members would meet, or at that time there were clients that meet annually or some half-yearly or some quarterly. And what we found is that when we're meeting with people annually, for example, there was just a mountain of work that we were doing. And a lot of that work would have been more effective to do earlier, but it didn't happen just simply because this is the first time we're meeting you since 12 months ago. We also identified a lot of times where we would where we'd be sitting down with a client and they would say something, and I'd think, damn it, because if I'd known that you were going to do that at that point, I would have been able to do three other things that would have either made that more effective or helped you and so on. So we made the decision 3 or 4 years ago that if we are to serve people well and give them not only the best advice that we can, but also in line with that commitment of ensuring that everyone makes as much progress as possible, quarterly is the right frequency to meet with people.
Yeah, right.
We have, like, they're not 2-hour meetings. You know, a lot of those meetings are half an hour, 45 minute, almost kind of powwows around like where you at, where are we at, what are we doing, let's keep moving forward. Yeah. But we've found that we're just so much better on top of our members' situations and so much better equipped to give high quality advice.
Mate, I know we want to talk about basically how to help kids get into the market. It's a real big challenge that the parents and grandparents are facing right now, particularly around things like the intergenerational wealth transfer that's going to come over the next 2, 3, 4 decades. But it's a lot of money in Australia that's going to pass down generations. Obviously, a lot of that's going to come in the form of property, but there'll be other things that come up. And I think what you've illustrated just then in your answer is that one of the true values of having a financial planner is things do change. And, you know, if we're both recording from Victoria, where many people may be familiar that land taxes have gone up in a big way for property. Everyone probably knows that the concessional contribution limit, like how much you can put into super and claim a tax deduction, has gone up over the past few years.
They're changing again.
Yeah. And then there's things like downsizer payments for people that are approaching retirement, do own a home. That may be a massive lever that people like James will help you with. So there's so many things that are constantly popping up, things that are changing. And as that kind of wave of money is passed down, there's going to be even more change, because the government's not going to see that and be like, oh yeah, we'll just let them do that for forever. There will be some sort of friction, no doubt, that comes in eventually. But so we've had a few people write into us and say, hey, I'd love for you to talk about how I could help my son and my daughter get into property. And this is a very heated debate, because there's basically the people that have the ability to help their children or grandchildren, and then there's kind of everyone else that, there are other strategies. So we're not kind of like downplaying how, you know, that can seem to you. Like, if that seems difficult and that seems like you're up against it, we fully appreciate that. But James, in the instance where parents, grandparents, whatever, want to think about helping their children, what are the first steps you take with someone when they walk through the Northeast door?
We do our best to understand or recognize what their definition is of helping, because that varies greatly from couple or individual to individual. Some of our members say, look, we've got this money sitting here. We've determined that we don't necessarily need it, like collectively the advisors, the members, we've determined that maybe that slice of money is not needed. So let's contribute that, and that's a gift. In other circumstances, the problem is just around being able to fund those really, really high mortgage repayments right now, and how they're going to, son, daughter, couple, whatever, are going to manage. So the first thing that we would do is to understand, like, what do you envision this being like? And then also combined with that is, for your child, or, it might be your child and their partner or whatever it would be, what's their vision of what they want to purchase, and what do they need most in order to achieve that? And so, for example, we often think about this with the lens of equity, which is that, if I give my child some money, son or daughter some money, then they're going to have enough free cash. They're going to have enough money to buy the house, and that's a thing getting in the way. But it's not necessarily, unless you plan on using the cash outright and just giving them a tremendous amount of money to just buy a home, which hats off to you if you can do that. But most people that we meet with, that's not an option. Unless that's the case, then they're still going to have a home loan. And especially at the moment, because interest rates are so high, it's not just about having the money in the honeypot. It's also about having enough regular income to demonstrate that you can service the loan, which was screamingly easy 36 months ago and is now remarkably difficult, depending on the home you're looking to buy.
Yeah, like a lot of people that come through RAS for mortgage broking, I don't know the exact figure, it has to be like 60 or 70% want to borrow but can't. And that's just the reality. Yeah, we kind of end up in this holding pattern until we do have the serviceability requirement met and the bank gives us the loan. But so you mentioned something there about giving money, say, to your kids. And let's say you're sitting there, you've got a decent super balance, maybe one of you is still working, and your daughter comes to you and says, hey, we're looking to get into property, and you can see it, and you go, well, I've got a few hundred grand in cash, I could maybe gift them some money, like almost like an early inheritance to help them at this very challenging point. I've got a question around this. Is if a parent does gift money to a child, can they just give that straight to them? Is there like any tax implications? Are there any like other implications they should be aware of? Is there any advice you typically give, like around protecting themselves? Like, how do you think about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. This is something that a lot of people miss, which is that there are some implications. Fortunately, there's no tax. If you've got a dollar in your pocket or in your bank account, unless you're a self-employed individual and that money hasn't had tax paid on, as a house rule, for it to find its way into your pocket, it's already gone through the tax system. And so you transferring money to someone else, whoever that person is, you have agency to do that, and that's no problem. So there's no tax associated. But one thing that a lot of people miss is if you are doing this as either an age pension recipient or any sort of Centrelink pension recipient, or approaching that time where you're going to become entitled. Because Centrelink has some rules around what's called gifting provisions.
That's right. And
the concept of it, frankly, is very fair. Firstly, it came about because you might have a couple who are about to become eligible for age pension, and they look at their net assets and say, well, unfortunately, we've got $1 million in cash or shares or whatever, and we that's going to mean that we get no healthcare card, or we're not entitled to any age pension. So what we're going to do is we're going to give this to our kids with a little bit of a nod and a wink and say, hey, whenever we want it, we'll have it back. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that ran rife to the point where Centrelink stepped in and said, well, from now on, you can't just give that volume of money away. In fact, the gifting rules are very, very defined and very strict. You are allowed to give a maximum of $10,000 per annum away across, not just per child, like across all gifts in total, and $30,000 over a rolling 5-year period. So right. If I can just make that simple for anyone listening, in year one, you give $10,000 away to your daughter. Year two, you give $10,000 away. Year three, you give $10,000 away. You can't give any more money away without it impacting your entitlement. Now, conversely, year one, you give $30,000 away. Year two, three, four, five, you give nothing. Unfortunately, because you've only allowed to give $10,000 away a year, that additional $20,000 is going to detriment your entitlement. And the way that it detriments your entitlement is that Centrelink says, let's go back to the couple with the $1 million cash example. Centrelink says, yeah, we can recognize you've given $1 million to your family member, but for our calculations, $10,000 is a gift and $990,000 will remain on your books as an asset. So okay. You've elected to give it away, but it stays as an asset and it will stay for a period of 5 years. And the reason why that's significant, of course, is if you're, let's imagine you're 64 years old, you run some preliminary calculations online or you get the support of an advisor or whomever to say, yeah, you're likely to be eligible for some age pension when you retire at 67. If you were to give this big lump sum amount of money away right now, that could distort your eligibility. And you might very well be better having anticipated that at age 62 and giving all the money away at age, like $1 million arbitrarily away at 62. Because when you get to the fifth year, the end of the fifth year, you're free and clear of that. There's some nuance in that. I mean, that if you're not getting age pension or less age pension, there is an element of that being a tax, you know. So, but there's no direct income tax that you pay.
Interesting. Yeah, great. That's really, really important. I totally forgot about that. And then university comes shooting back down my spine and now I remember.
Yep. Sorry to take us back to that one.
I blocked that out and now it's come back. Thanks, mate. So that's like one of the variations. How about then, like in terms of, let's say someone comes to you, I'll give you a different kind of case study. Someone comes to you and they've got more of their money tied up in super. Maybe they're a bit younger than, say they're like late 50s, 60s, because that seems to be something that happens at the moment. It's like that age group. They got a bit of money in super. Maybe, you know, one of them's working or I don't know, however you want to frame that. But they're a bit younger than the age pension. And now they're thinking, well, I want to give the money to my kids. Is there any other way to structure it? Like, is it often just a gift? Is that the best way to do it?
Part of this is going to depend on your family dynamic and, and the relationship you have with your kids and also your kids. My worldview is that, and my experience is that some people don't respond well to lump sum gifts. It will achieve the primary outcome that you might want, which is that, for example, okay, you can buy a house, there you go. I think there's a lot to be said for building the cadence and discipline of having to save regularly and tighten your financial situation and so on. And what better time to do that than early on in your financial life, you know, in your financial adult life, where the stakes are low, your expenses are naturally going to be a little bit lower. You know, if there's a time to learn how to rein in your expenses, doing that at a younger age without kids and without some of the bigger financial responsibilities you're going to have, it stands to reason that's a good time. So in the circumstances where we don't need to think about gifting and that's out of the way and we have members say to us, hey, we're thinking about contributing, I would typically advocate the value of offering a sort of a, you know, whether it's a dollar for dollar or some sort of a savings incentive scheme. Like if by the end of the year you can be at this financial position, then we will support you by doubling those savings or whatever it would be. It's a screamingly good deal. Requires a little bit of grit on behalf of the saver, which again, for me personally, I think that has a lot of merit. And it's notwithstanding that if there were some unique circumstances that led you to conclude that, hey, I can see that you put in a lot of effort here, but you missed the target, you've still got discretion to change your plans.
Yeah.
So yes, firstly, of course, you That's can lump sum yeah. deposit. There's the money. Secondly, you can do some savings matching, that dollar for dollar type concept. It's not uncommon to see parents want to offer their kids a loan. Where they might say, we might say, based on your financial position, we don't think it's appropriate for you to give this amount of money away because it is going to compromise your retirement plans pretty significantly. And in that circumstance, they might say to their children, okay, I can see that arbitrarily $50,000 would significantly change the timeframes to enable you to buy this house, but I don't have the 50K to just give to you and not think about again. What I'll do is I'll give you the $50,000 and the expectation is over the next, you know, like settle in, build your financial life, get, you know, build your career. At some point in the coming 5 years, the expectation would be that you'd be paying that money back, and you know that may have a nominal amount of interest or CPI on it or something, or it might just be a case of just give me back the 50 and we'll call it even. That's that's something that we see.
I like that idea of the savings plan. I think that's a really good one because it does incentivize good behavior. Like we often talk about on this show, is that one of the things parents should be giving their kids is an education in finance, because they don't really get it anywhere else other than through the podcast, of course. So this is a really good opportunity to kind of instill those values. I remember growing up, some of my friends had family members who helped them with that. They didn't give them money to buy a car or anything like that, but they did help them by saying, well, you put in, you know, $1,000, I'll put in $1,000. You put in 500, I'll put in 500 or something like that. Like a matching plan sounds like a really good way to do that. And then so I assume that that would be, technically that would be a gift, like money going to them. But like you said, it could be also at maybe towards the end, there's a bit of a lump sum, or maybe that's in the form of a loan or quote unquote loan with a family member. How, one question I was hoping to put to you was, obviously kind of like mixed families are very common. It's, you know, a fact of life that some people break up, some people get divorced, and things happen, right? I often think of parents helping their kids, and I have a lot of people in the RAS community who come to me and say that, you know, like, I want to help my kids, and I ask them about their family dynamics, and then I obviously can't give them personal advice, but I think in the back of my head, I think just need to be careful and make sure you protect yourself. Is there anything that stands out to you in that regard of the parents, grandparents protecting themselves, like anything that you've come across?
Yes, there is. I mean, the most common thing that stands out is having a loan agreement for, you know, any of the money that's handed over. We've spoken before with our members about the merits of a loan agreement with their children, even if they don't intend to enforce it. But this gives me the discretion to enforce it if I want. And so if we consider, I've got the son Finn, he's nowhere near old enough to buy a house at this point, but let's fast forward a couple of decades and say that's where he's at. And he is with a lovely but temperamental partner who we think could, you know, we're not entirely sure if they're going to go the distance. Yeah. In that case, you know, Finn says, hey, my temperamental partner and I want to buy a home and we really appreciate some financial support. Then the merit of a loan agreement is that it's really clear that, hey, that money is ours and at some point we're going to claim upon it. Secondly, in a worst case scenario that they are to separate, then that loan would be considered as part of the marital asset pool when the assets are being distributed. So I'm not just tipping in arbitrarily 100 grand and then if they separate, 50 grand of that goes to the partner at some point. So that can be very effective. And I might have a conversation with my wife, Louise, hopefully still my wife at the time, and say, hey, for what it's worth, you know, we're lucky enough that we don't ever intend to claim on this. I'm not going to run over to Finn, I may or I may not, and say, hey, just letting you know, I don't intend to claim on it, because then that perhaps sets the wrong expectation in case I do want to. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking that this might just be a loan that I forgive at some point.
Yeah, and then maybe 5 years down the track, you have that conversation. 10 years, you just, yeah. I think that's
Or he makes a pile of money, and I think, what did I give you money for? And I come and ask for my money back.
Yeah, yeah. No, that would be a good outcome. So, but that makes a lot of sense, because it gives you the parent the protection in the case that something does happen with their relationship. But it also gives them the flexibility and also kind of the responsibility in that they will kind of be proactive in the way that they approach the relationship. And maybe you could say, maybe not, but maybe you could say there's more gratitude there for that as well, in terms of, you know, I've developed a very healthy relationship with my kids about money, and they understand that, you know, I've extended in this because there's an agreement, it seems more formal, etc. There is a couple
if
of
I
other
may, I might just add one thing to that, which is I add respectfully, but for you to consider what sort of a lender you're going to be. This is very important because we I don't know about you, but I think a lot of people on this show are going to have had the experience of lending someone money that doesn't come back at this at the time frame that was either set or in line with your expectations. And, you know, some people can be very pragmatic about that and say, that's all good. You know, it'll come back when it comes back. For me, I remember a couple of years ago lending someone some money and it just wasn't coming back. And their social media account was littered with nights out and all this sort of stuff. And it was just on the back of my, I couldn't help but feel like, oh, this is, you know, this is really taking the mickey here because, like, I've told you that I need this money and here we are. The reason why this is important is because when you, if you gift someone money, well, then it's case closed and hopefully that's the end of the story. You know, a gift shouldn't have this entitlement to be involved with their finances after that, hopefully. But lending money, we often see that being the source of strained family relationships over time where you might hypothetically lend, I might lend money to Finn and his wonderful partner and I expect that the money's going to come back in, say, 3 years, you're going to start paying that and then it isn't coming back after 5 years, but they're off jet-setting around the world and doing all these sorts of things. That can create little fractures in the relationship. So bear in mind, think about how you'd respond in that sort of environment. Are you the sort of person to say, oh, look, it's all good, never mind? Or are you the sort of person where that would really grate on you? Because if it would, you need to have the foresight to A, know that, and B, communicate that. Say, let me tell you how this could blow up and that's if this happens.
Yeah, most people that listen to the show, I'm glad you put that in because most people who listen to this show have considerable amounts of money. Not everyone, obviously, we're all on our own journey in different stages of life. But a lot of people that listen to the show have been through that and they have the maturity to understand that there's what's written in an agreement and there's what's, you know, assumed through relationships and how those things can go wrong. I get most concerned when people seem to be very naive. And it typically is younger people because they haven't had that life experience. Like in their 20s and 30s, they might buy a house with their partner or a friend or a family member is probably the most assumed knowledge and most assumed respect, but it turns out not to be the case. But as you go on later in life, you kind of do have that in your back of my mind that there's a big probability here and it shouldn't be discounted that it could go completely pear-shaped. And that's what I'm living with. Like I'm living with the risk of that. But there are two other things that I was hoping to talk to you about. One of them is a guarantor. If you could talk to the merits of that. And then a lot of the time we do see people trying to help with that serviceability element as well. So can you just talk to those two things?
Yeah, I'd love to. I'm a huge advocate of guarantor loans. I think that they're a fantastic way, frankly, in my mind's eye, assuming that you understand the risk well and you can perceive the risks to be low, the best way of supporting your children with buying a property. Mm-hmm. And firstly, let's start with what a guarantor loan is. We'll use a scenario of Finn being a little bit older and he wants to purchase a property. We're in Blackburn. Let's imagine that we're at a point in our lives where we've got no debt, so fairly straightforward. And for whatever reason, we'd love to support Finn getting into the property market, but we just don't have the free cash now. All the money's locked up in investments, superannuation, a business. We've just had some financial outlay. We'd love to, mate, but it's just not possible. A lot of members that we meet are in a situation like this where they don't just have the 50 or 100K lying around to help out, but you don't necessarily need to use it. The nature of a guarantor loan is that if you are to buy a property and you need to borrow money, which is going to be most of our children, and you need to borrow money, you will need to demonstrate two things to the bank. The first one is serviceability, which is I can afford to repay the loan. And there's a calculation that's based on your income and so on. And we'll get to serviceability in a moment, of course, in line with your earlier comment. The second is equity, which is to say that for the value of the property that I'm purchasing, I've got enough money locked away to buy that property. So if you want to buy a $1 million property and you've got $10,000 of savings, it's just not possible. It's not possible. If you have $50,000 of savings, even then it's probably not going to be possible, because by the time that you pay for stamp duty and transaction costs, by the time that you do those things, which would normally be, call it, you know, 6% or thereabouts, you that's going to erode all everything, and your deposit for the actual property is zero. So most, in order to do this and get started, you really need, as a house rule, at least 11% normally in order to get started, which would be around 6% for transaction costs and then a 5% deposit on top of that. Now, one of the horrible things that happens with buying a property with only a 5% deposit is that you're going to encounter what's called lender's mortgage insurance, or LMI. And a lot of people will have heard of this term or suffered from its extended clause. And the concept of it is, it is a lump sum, one-off insurance payment that you pay in order to mitigate the risk of the bank, because the bank says, well, if you're borrowing on a very, very, very low, with a very low deposit, your risk of default on this loan is much higher. So that's why we take that amount. Now, as a very small aside, as a house rule, we find the sweet spot for lender's mortgage insurance is about 12%. If you've got a 12% deposit on top of that 6% transaction again, so if you're buying a $1 million property, that'd be 18%, about 180K in savings. From then on, it starts to be a lot less penalizing. But if you've got a 7 or 8% deposit only, lender's mortgage insurance can really hurt, you know, to the tune of almost 5% of the value of the property as a one-off payment, like 50 grand, capitalized into the loan for forever. It sucks.
Yeah.
A guarantor loan enables you to stump, as the parent, you to stump up equity in your existing home in order to enable them to get up to the 20% margin from wherever they are and avoid lender's mortgage insurance. And in some cases, of course, you could stump up the entire amount, say, for the transaction costs and push them from 0% all the way up to 20. Now, the critical thing is that, if assuming that your property firstly has enough equity in it, like if you had a huge mortgage on your own property, it might not be tenable. But if you have enough equity in your own property, there's actually no change of circumstance for you. Your cash flow doesn't change as a person who goes guarantor. Your income doesn't change. The things that you do day to day don't change. Your financial position doesn't change. The risk here is, assuming that you've managed the scenario well, in my perception, is it is small, but also it is severe, because the risk is that if you stump up that, the gap between the 5% and the 20% buffer, 15% of $1 million, $150,000 of equity in your home is stumped up there to go guarantor. In a worst case scenario that Finn defaults on his loan and then the property is sold for less than the value of the less than the value that the mortgage is, I will be on the hook for that shortfall, because, or at least my property will be on the hook for it, and that means that I'm on the hook. The reason why I feel really positive about the guarantor loans is because, again, it doesn't require you to lose any money. You can continue on your own trajectory, in a lot of cases, trajectory unchanged. The risk is there, but it exists as a combination of things. Firstly, that your son or daughter, that Finn, can't pay make the repayments. Now, notwithstanding that, if that were the reality, frankly, I'd probably be helping him to make the repayments so he didn't default, because if he does default, then it hurts me. But that's something that, you know, that's going to be circumstantial. But then not only does Finn default on the loan, but also the value of the sold property exceeds that of the loan. So it sort of assumes that you get no property price growth over time, which if in Melbourne, at least as a house rule, if you bought a property and then held it for 3 to 4 years and then defaulted, almost always in historical Melbourne trends, you'd be out of that problem, because there'd be more than enough money to clear the loan when the property was sold. Mm. Now, with a guarantor loan, you can have that refinance off the loan. So I say to Finn, yep, I'll stump up the equity in this house to give you that leg up. I want to be really clear about how long I expect it to take you to keep saving and get yourself into a position where you can get to 20% loan-to-value ratio. And that's a combination of A, you saving money, and B, the value of the property hopefully growing over time. And then as those two things come together, as soon as you've got a 20% deposit, It might be a case that FINS 50,000 goes up to 100,000 in terms of the savings and deposit plus savings, and the value of the property grows from $1 million to 1.15 million. In that scenario, okay, mate, well, you've now got enough equity loan to value ratio that you can refinance that debt and you can refinance me out of that guarantor loan. So I'm free and clear. So of course there are risks, but I think if they're well managed, I think those risks can be quite low. Critically, it doesn't necessarily have to have a huge bleed on your own financial life if that's what you want to do.
Yeah, I appreciate that detailed explanation. I think one of the things that parents should do is just make sure that, one, you have a good relationship and you expect to have a good relationship with your kids, and there is a very strong understanding of the outcomes. The other thing I would maybe add on here is there's two things. One is some banks do require the parents to get legal advice or say that they've consulted a lawyer. And I think that's just important just so you understand the risks. A lot of banks have documents that you can download about what is a guarantor and how do they approach it. And the other thing that I was going to say about guarantors is that if you, for example, may want to sell your home in the next 1 to 2 years, just be mindful that your home may in effect be the security that your child is relying on. So say, for example, in the instance the parents want to sell up and downsize because this is a superannuation contribution, that's where a financial planner like, say, James, will sit down with you and go, hey, yeah, that could be a good idea, but we're going to take advantage of this downsizing payment into super. And so maybe now this isn't the right structure. Maybe there's another way we can do that. Maybe you can sell the house and use some of that in a different way or give a loan or whatever other strategy. So do get that advice before you commit to something is probably my key, particularly if you're approaching or in retirement. Get the advice, because if let's think about it, James. In the case someone buys an $800,000 home, you've got your super that you're trying to maximize through transition to retirement or downsize or whatever. Paying $5,000 to $10,000 for advice is a very, very low cost way to minimize that risk. Yeah.
I'd like to think so. Yeah. I'll leave it to the audience to make their own conclusions. But yeah, I definitely think it is.
Yeah. Okay. So we could keep going on for a long time, but I kind of just wanted to have this conversation because it's so important to a lot of our community right now. And basically it comes down to knowing, as you say, kind of the trajectory, the progress that is being made with your client, which is the person that's maybe in retirement or approaching retirement, knowing that progress and then dealing with these types of, maybe we'll call them secondary goals or short, medium-term goals with children along the way. Then from there, it's exploring what are the options that we have based on serviceability, based on equity, based on our goals over the next 3 to 5 years. And maintaining those relationships appropriately, I think, is so important. I know that a few of the RAS community have come to you and asked these types of questions. So I would encourage anyone that is watching or listening, please reach out to James. There's a link in the show notes that says Ask Financial Planning. You can click that link. And if you're over the age of 50, you'll be directed straight to James and his team. Or just send James an email. There's a link in the show notes for that as well. You can book a call with his team. That's the way to get started. Mate, this has been great fun. You'll be back on the show, no doubt, to do some more Q&As and that type of thing. So if anyone is listening to this and you do have an experience with this, if you are in this situation, if you're on the other side, if you're the kids wanting to get your parents involved in helping you, write into us, let us know, and we can put them to James in the next Q&A. But, mate, James O'Reilly from Northeast Wealth, I really do appreciate you taking some time to share some of your wisdom with us, mate.
Thanks, mate. I really appreciate it. So I'd love to add, if I may, just add one more thing. But it's just popped up as we're having this chat, which is one possibility that people might consider is the merits of buying a house that my kids are going to live in and that's going to be their home, but I'm going to own it. And I really want to emphasize that is almost always a really bad decision. If you're buying a house that your kids are going to live in and not pay rent, like it's your home, but I've bought it.
I've seen that happen.
The significant problem you're going to run into is that if you gave them the cash and they bought it, they would pay no tax on that property because they live in it. And when they eventually sell it for hopefully double what it's worth, it's no capital gains tax because they get the exemption, the principal place of residence exemption. If you've bought it and your children live in it, and it's not an investment property because it's their home, when it is sold, it's capital gains tax applicable, and it's extremely penalizing. And we've seen this for a few members, and it just becomes this ugly rolling stone that's just getting bigger and bigger. So
we should have done an episode that was 5 things not to do. Start with the end in mind, and there's a lot of things that can go wrong with this. So that's such a great point. But mate, obviously anyone get in contact with James if you do want some expert advice, particularly around this, but also superannuation, insurance, so many different things. You can get in contact with James and the team at Northeast Wealth. So mate, thanks for your time.
Yeah, pleasure. Thanks very much for having me.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. Before you go, I wanted to share some things with you. Specifically, I wanted to tell you about the 10 ways that Rask could help you in 2024. As many of you know, Rask has grown to become one of the biggest investing and finance platforms in Australia. Across our podcasts, our websites, our memberships, and so on, we now engage around 200,000 Aussies, which, considering we started in a humble lounge room on a Kmart desk, one of those old fake white wooden ones, I'm pretty ecstatic about where we are 6 years later. As part of becoming one of Australia's biggest platforms for wealth creation and preservation, we now have a very special position in the country in that we can bring you some of the best, most thoughtful, expert-driven ways to protect and grow your wealth. And I'm going to share some of those with you now. I've got 10 ways that we can potentially help you or match you with someone who can. The first thing that I want to tell you about is the biggest step we've ever taken at Rask, which is the launch of our Rask Invest platform. This is a platform that lets our team, led by me, invest for you, primarily through low-cost, diversified ETFs. We'll have 3 strategies at launch, and every investor who comes through can pick one of the 3 strategies, being a balanced strategy, a growth strategy, and a high growth strategy. The balanced strategy focuses on passive income, and the high growth strategy focuses on longer term compounding. You will find a link in your podcast player to register your interest. We will be taking off soon. Number 2, if you prefer to DIY your investing, you can join me and over 4,000 members inside Rask Core. That's our full ETF and ASX share research membership community. You can join now and you'll get updated ETF portfolio recommendations every quarter, as well as ongoing ASX and global stock research. Every single month, we call them the All-Star Stocks. You get that alongside the ETF portfolios, as well as other members-only content. It's called Rask Core. Number 3, our first ever partnership with a business other than our own was a business by the name of Blusk, which has since become Flint Group. Flint Group is led by Chris Bates and Christian Stevens, 2 of Australia's most highly regarded mortgage brokers. Already over 200 Rask community members have begun the Rask plus Flint Group mortgage broking process. You can click the link in your podcast player if you're refinancing, investing, a first home buyer, or whatever. You've probably heard Chris on the show many times. Number 4, you can connect with our most trusted financial advisors. Whether you're 25 years old, just graduated uni and looking to set yourself up, or approaching or in retirement and you've got that nest egg you want to protect and generate a passive income from, you can get in contact with our trusted panel of financial advisors. You can find the link in your podcast player. It's there each and every week. Just click the thing that says financial planning. Number 5, if you want specialist insurance advice, as Warren Buffett said, rule number 1 is don't lose money. And rule number 2 is don't forget rule number 1. Insurance is vitally important, especially when it comes to your number 1 asset, you. Whether you're a single income household or a couple, and you just want to protect what would happen if, you want to protect your family if something goes wrong, you want to protect your spouse if you lose your job, you want to protect yourself if you hurt yourself on the weekend at footy,
insurance is a way to do that. And I think the best way to do insurance is through a financial planner. And there's a few reasons for that, but one of them is sometimes some insurers will only work with financial advisors, but they can also be your companion as you go through the sometimes daunting process of getting insurance done properly. Sometimes you might not even know, but you're not even covered, even though you think you are. So get the right advice. You'll find a link in the show notes to check that out. Number six, buying property. If you're like me and you're thinking of buying property in the next 12 months, or maybe you've already invested and you're looking to downsize, getting the right advice and being able to build wealth through property is a proven strategy. It might be one of the most contentious, but I think that we have one of Australia's best property coaches in our ranks. That is Pete Wargent. Pete is the host of the now super popular Australian property podcast by Rask, and he's also my analyst team's macro consultant. So if you're a member of Rask Core, you will have seen Pete's name around the traps. He's a property coach and buyer's agent, and he works with a select number of people each and every year. Just a note on this. This is not a commercial thing with Pete. Pete just has great services, so we offer them to the community. And when he fills up, he fills up. You can find out more about Pete's coaching in the show notes. Next up, tracking your portfolio for tax? I think you are, because I think you have to. So we've partnered with Nivexa to help you manage your share and ETF reporting, whether it's tax or performance. All Rask users get 20% off an annual plan with Nivexa. You can sync your portfolio with Nivexa's software, and it automatically tracks your dividends, your capital gains tax, and more. Again, not a commercial partnership. We don't make anything from working with Nivexa, but they do create some great tools which the Rask community uses each and every day. Number eight, want to run your own business? Maybe you already do. If you want more profit, but less stress, less time consumed, and less energy lost, get in contact. We have a partner business called Inflection. The Inflection Accelerator Program is a complete online course that helps you and a community of members engage and follow a proven strategy for growing your business. I'm grateful to be one of the coaches inside the Accelerator program, helping business owners right across Australia. You can find more following the link in your podcast player. It's the one that says coaching. Number nine, if you haven't already checked it out, join over 20,000 other people who tune into the Rask YouTube channel. It is completely free and you get notified when we go live and when we publish podcast episodes. There is a podcast on the Rask network each and every day, as well as bite-sized material that's less than 60 seconds, or those really punchy tutorials and webinars that are just 15 minutes that take you through a really exciting topic, whether it's how to buy a property, whether it's how to pick a dividend ETF. Some of our most popular content actually just explains things like, what the heck is franking credits and how do I calculate if I've got some? That's on our YouTube channel. Number 10, if you want to be a better investor, a saver, a better partner with money, or just understand your own relationship with money, you can do that. All of that by going to the Rask Education website and taking a free course. We've enrolled over 26,000 students at the time of this recording, and we are on a mission to get to 100,000 in the next few years. Rask Education is our mostly free education platform, covering everything from budgeting and automation to the probably, I would say, the best value investing program in the country. So whether you're a value investor, an intermediate investor, you want to know how to value Woolworths shares, or you simply just want to understand what ethical investing is, or buy your first property and what actually happens on settlement day, head to the Rask Education website and enroll in something today. It is free and it supports us, because then I can come on here next month and I can say we've got 27,000, and hopefully we reach critical mass where we can help more Australians manage their money better. Thank you for listening to this long-winded ad. If you want to get in contact with me, you know where to go. There's a link in your show notes. Basically, these 10 services, even though some of them we don't make any money from, support Rask and allow us to produce these podcasts, attract the biggest and best guests from Australia and around the world, and bring them to you to answer your questions. Thank you for being part of the Rask network, and thank you for your ongoing support. Bye for now.